Future-proof extra.
With Jonathan McRae.
Proudly supported by Science Foundation Ireland.
On News Talk.
Any diagnosis of a brain tumour must come as a terrible shock. But for patients diagnosed with glioblastoma, the prognosis is particularly devastating, as only 3 to 5% of people who are diagnosed with this type of brain tumour will be alive 3 years later. And for decades, little to no progress has been made in the treatment of this disease. But could that all be about to change? Well, Dr. Brian Choi is Associate Director of the Centre for Brain Tumour Immunology and Immunotherapy at Massachusetts General Hospital. He joins me now. Welcome to the program, Brian. Let's try and go through the basics really quickly so everyone's up to speed. Why are tumors problematic? What exactly is a tumor and why is it so dangerous?
Thanks, John, for actually having me on the program and to talk a little bit about our work. Tumors in general are just difficult to treat. I mean, cancers are cells that are out of control. They multiply and they can take over the functions of the normal body. I think in the brain, they're specifically difficult to deal with because the brain, as you know, different parts of the brain, unlike another part of your body, the brain is encased in a hard skull, right? And so if a tumor grows in that area, it doesn't have a escape mechanism. It just builds a pressure in that area. And not only can it build a pressure like, you know, if there's a tumor in your arm, it can grow and there's room for it to grow through the skin, etc. In the brain, it's encased by a skull. And not only that, parts of the brain are very essential to function. So you can imagine if that tumor or cancer affects an area of the brain that's responsible for movement or speech, that can really affect someone's function.
So what is a glioblastoma and how often would they come across?
Glioblastomas are the most common and also the most aggressive form of cancer in the brain. And, you know, often when we talk about cancers in the brain, they can be classified as either coming from the brain tissue or coming from elsewhere in the body and spreading to the brain tissue. So that's what we call metastatic brain cancer. But if you hear about tumors in the brain, those are the main two categories. Glioblastoma is just the most common one that actually comes from the brain tissue itself, and it's something that we don't have a lot of treatments for.
When people talk about tumors, often one imagines a sort of homogenous type of cell that is just growing out of control, but there's quite a bit to tumors. Are glioblastomas of particular interest because they come from other parts of the body and affect the brain?
Well, you bring up a very interesting concept. And so I'm a neurosurgeon, but also an immunotherapist. So, looking at these tumors, when you look at them at a cellular level, they're actually not homogeneous. We probably call them heterogeneous. And that's a fancy word that means basically no two cells in a tumor are exactly alike. And I think that's what goes back to your prior question of what makes them difficult to treat is that if you develop a treatment and you only treat maybe 50% of the tumor because every tumor cell is different and your treatment's not effective in the other 50%, that tumor has the opportunity to grow back and ultimately cause you problems. Now, the reason why we focus on the immune system in our group is because we actually believe that the immune system can protect you and kind of grow to defend your body against these cancers in real time. And that's kind of how we think about the immune system with an infectious disease. Like you get a flu shot and your body's able to recognize the flu. And the next year, if you're able to kind of train or sensitize your immune system again to the flu again, you can actually adapt to that. In the same way, we're asking the immune system to adapt to the cancer.
But of course, our immune system doesn't always act the way that we want it to. And in particular, in cancer, those cells just aren't targeted in the same way a virus might be if it's been recognized by the system. Why is that? And they might use that to introduce CAR T therapy.
It's so interesting that, yes, I mean, that's basically the crux of what we work on. So unlike viruses or bacteria or pathogens or, you know, foreign things, they look very different from human cells. And so our immune system is very easily recognizes them as foreign and says, okay, we got to target this with everything we have. That gives us like the idea of the potential of the immune system on a very cellular level. The immune system has the capacity to recognize something as foreign and kill it. Cancers come from our own cells ultimately. if you think about them, they're like cancer cells masquerading as normal cells. They originated as a normal cell that slowly went awry. And kind of on the outside, there are parts of it that look mostly normal. So the immune system kind of might see it and not react to it as strongly as you would hope. And so that's why these cancers form. But we believe, or people like me or people in our field believe, that they're just different enough. The cells are just different enough that we can actually eventually sensitize and discover, you know, discover how they're slightly different, and then train the immune system up to fight it. I mean, this is the same thing. It's similar to the idea of, you know, when you're born, we have these terrible diseases out there that we've basically eradicated with the advent of vaccines. And, you know, patients at baseline don't have the ability to fight these things off. But if we're able to discover the exact way to prime our immune response against things, we can basically eradicate many of the diseases the infectious diseases that no longer actually plague us. So the hope is to do that with cancer.
And so that's the approach with CAR T, is to sort of harness the power of the immune system to fight these cancer cells. But first, you need to get the T cells, the killer cells, to recognize that this is something that should be destroyed. How does CAR T work?
So CAR T cells, this is a technology that has really revolutionized the treatment of liquid tumors or hematological cancers, things like lymphomas and leukemias. And so those are already FDA approved. We work in the context of solid tumors, but the general idea is the same. You take a T cell, a small blood sample from the body. The T cells are thought to be the most important cells in an anti-tumor response, the ones that can actually kill cancers. And so what we do is you take a small sample out, then we modify their genetics, and we insert what we call a chimeric antigen receptor, a CAR molecule, which actually has specificity to a surface target on a tumor, meaning that it can recognize it almost like a little molecular harness. It basically, you train these cells outside of the body to express a little tag that then recognizes a tumor. And then we infuse those cells back into the body. So we kind of do the training for the body, and we put the cells back in and let them do their work.
So is that exposing the T cells to the tumor in a controlled environment? And with this new genetic tweak that you've given them, they can build up an ability to recognize and kill it? And then it's sort of, then you multiply the cells before they go back into the body. Is that it?
Right, that's right. I mean, what we do is we train the cells to recognize the tumor. And then
how do you do that?
We expand them several, 1,000, 10,000 fold, and then place them back in. So T cells, many cells have what we call receptors on their surface that recognize things that signal, then create a signaling cascade in those T cells to go target something and kill it. We actually insert a receptor that we've designed that we know recognizes a tumor, a certain tumor of interest, and we actually place that gene for that receptor into a cell using a virus, and we use a lentivirus to do that. So viruses, it's interesting how we've talked about viruses as both pathogens and also tools that we can use to actually create therapeutic ends. And so in this setting, we've actually used the power of a virus to enter a cell and to change the genetics of it. And we've trained that virus in turn to get the T cell to express that tumor receptor of interest. So
right. And so once we inject the CAR T cells at the site, often we see, particularly in these, as you say, these blood cancers, as we've seen, we can have a really dramatic response to something that up until recently has been, you know, completely resistant to any therapy. Can you talk to me about some of the successes of CAR-T before we talk about your research and where we are with that?
Yeah, I mean, so I mentioned that CAR-T cells, at least in the U.S., have been approved by our FDA for several different types of hematological or blood-type cancers. And so in the setting of even those cancers that have been relapsed or refractory or like not responsive to all the therapies that we have. So I would say that in the past 10 years, in the past decade, this has been a revolution of how we think about how T cells can actually eliminate cancers. There are a couple studies across the world I can in solid tumor, which is now kind of the new frontier. It's like, can this work for a solid cancer, not just like cancer cells that circulate through the body? Mm. And so there are a couple challenges with that, but several of the advances have been made in tumors in the brain. There are studies, one from Italy, looking at a tumor called neuroblastoma, which is actually a systemic solid tumor, which was also published recently. So what we're starting to see is kind of this almost renaissance of CAR T cell technology, but it's early stage, and it's early stage in multiple solid cancers. And so, you know, this is really just, you know, reassuring and encouraging to us. It gives us a lot of hope and optimism that we might actually have an answer for a lot of the cancers that we don't have a solution for today.
Which is really, really exciting. Where are you with your research and where are we globally with using CAR T to attack solid tumors?
Yeah, we're still very early. This is in kind of the infancy of what we're understanding. But what we are starting to see is in many, I'll say several groups, even within the past few months, have published their results and made them available in manuscripts to describe what their early experiences with this platform. So I would say we're just starting to treat patients with things like glioblastoma and other solid tumors with CAR T cells within the last year. And when you talk about what that means in the grand scheme of things, clinical trials are initially structured to make sure that something is safe, not even to look at to see if something's actually working. So what was really exciting about our work so far and what's been published in the New England Journal of Medicine is that even though that the first three patients we treated were really to determine if this therapy is safe, that was the goal. But what we were also seeing in that setting was radiographic changes in the tumor that made us realize that this is clinically also actually having some type of effect. And so, you know, the first stage is just to look at safety. The second stage is to look at how efficacious or how much something is working. And so we are still in that first stage. But what's reassuring is that our group and several other groups are starting to actually see that it might actually be working.
Which is really exciting. Out of interest, what happens to those patients who have seen some sort of improvement, but it is early stages, it's phase one? Do those patients then, do they continue to receive treatment, or is that not possible?
So every protocol that we initiate as part of a clinical trial is very organized. I mean, we propose exactly what we're going to do, what our endpoints are going to be, and when we're going to reassess to say, okay, are we going to change this, and are we going to provide additional infusions? Did they even tolerate the first one? What did we see? And so we're in the stage where we're actually trying to assess as a team what is the most effective way to move forward. And we have several options. One of them is to administer the therapy several times. Another is to condition the patients with what we call a lymphodepleting chemotherapy regimen, which might actually enhance the function of the T cells. So there are a couple options that we're discussing, and we're trying to actually just learn as much as we can about this therapy since it's so new.
Yeah, it's really exciting because this is just one therapy. You haven't yet twinned it with other approaches such as chemotherapy or priming the patient in any way. So do you think we're quite close to having something workable for glioblastoma?
It all depends. We're understanding the data that come in so rapidly. This is truly what we call the bleeding edge of technology. It's at that edge where no one really knows. And the potential is really limitless in a way. But at the same time, we want to be measured in that, you know, it's still very early. We saw that this is safe, and that's actually the most reassuring thing.
Yeah. And I know, of course, as a scientist and researcher and a clinician, you always have to hedge on the side of caution. But just looking at some of these photographs from the New England Journal of Medicine, you know, after 5 days, you know, the difference in the size of these tumors, it does make you hope. A really exciting cutting edge therapy, I suppose, deserves funding. Is this something that's easy to get funding for because it's dealing with something that is so dangerous? And it's a field that's recognizing that there is advancements.
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head. The reason why I feel like our peers, you know, in a jury of our peers, we displayed these data. And we asked people what they thought. It was obviously accepted at for publication, and people are, the response has been great in the field. I would say, you know, yes, I like to be realistic about what we're doing. But at the same time, I will say that we haven't seen anything like this with any form of treatment that we've had for this deadly disease for several decades now. And so it's something that we're all excited about. And we think that this could actually be, it has the potential to change things for patients with this disease and move the needle. And, yeah. And you know, in terms of funding, that is constant. To get people to support this type of work, the people who have supported us to date, even the patients who are willing to enroll in the trials, we are always thankful for all of those, because without people who look at this type of work and say, "Hey, I'd love to contribute to that," it doesn't happen. We really depend on people to not only donate but also support this work financially and with their lives, ultimately in clinical trials. And so we're eternally thankful for people as they continue to enroll in these trials and support our work.
Well, keep at it, Brian. Fantastic speaking with you. That's Brian Choi, Assistant Professor of Neurosurgery at Harvard Medical School and Associate Director of the Center for Brain Tumor Immunology and Immunotherapy at Mass General. Really loved speaking with you. The best of luck. Take care.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Future Proof Extra
with Jonathan McRae.
Proudly supported by Science Foundation Ireland
on News Talk.